This is your host, Mark Lou Carrier, welcoming you to the second episode of Fakes, Frauds, and Phonies. Today, a 500-year-old whodunit. Now, most days, if you scan the newspapers, magazines, or the web, you will find a story related to art forgery or fraud somewhere. I went on a fishing expedition with Google no more than a few hours before writing these words and came up with this story. The main event took place 500 years ago, and the controversy still rages. The prime suspect? None other than Michelangelo. Columbia University's Lynn Catterson won't be interviewing eyewitnesses or victims of this alleged swindle. They're all long dead, as you can imagine. But she's accusing Michelangelo of forgery, and she's determined to prove it. What's even more interesting is that Catterson is far from the first to cast doubts on Michelangelo's honesty. Giorgio Vasari, who stepped into history as the world's first art historian when he published Lives of the Artists in 1550, wrote of Michelangelo, and I quote, "He also copied drawings of the old masters so perfectly that his copies could not be distinguished from the originals, since he smoked and tinted the paper to give it an appearance of age. He was so often able to keep the originals and return his copies in their stead." Close quotations. The illustrious de' Medici family supported Michelangelo at the beginning of his career in Renaissance Florence, but the amount they provided was meager and kept him at a level of bare subsistence. Times were tough for the young yet unrecognized artist. Meals were often skipped, and things got worse when the city expelled the de' Medicis and their dribble of funds dried up completely. The poor fellow's finances hit rock bottom, then he allegedly became aware of a simple fact, a truth that has motivated every forger since then. You can make more money forging an old master than selling your own art. It was true then, and it's still true today. According to Lynn Catterson, Michelangelo applied his considerable talent to making a forgery that would sell quickly for a good price and fill his empty coffers. She claims he sculpted the work known as Laocoon and pawned it off to Pope Julius II as a genuine Roman-era sculpture. The statue depicts the Trojan high priest Laocoon and his two sons being strangled by sea serpents. That was punishment for his instructing the citizens of Troy not to trust the Greeks and for hurling his spear at their wooden horse. Pliny the Elder, the Roman encyclopedist, records that three sculptors from the Greek island of Rhodes carved the original sculpture. He describes it as a work superior to all the pictures and bronzes of the world, and he notes that it was sculpted from a single piece of marble. Catterson's detractors stick to Pliny's attribution, but typically, the scholars who do not agree with her cannot agree among themselves. Some say the work is indeed of Roman origin, while others say it is Hellenic. But no matter the origin of the sculptor, it remains an imposing work and an outstanding example of craftsmanship, which might point to Michelangelo. But Catterson feels she has more compelling evidence. Admiring the back of the statue, Catterson was struck by a similarity between the depiction of sinewy muscles and bone structure and a 1501 drawing by Michelangelo she'd studied at Oxford's Ashmolean Museum. She notes with particular interest that the drawing is dated 5 years before the Laocoon sculpture was discovered, and she claims it could be superimposed over the sculpted torso for an almost exact match. She also points out that in the drawing, the left arm is raised, while it is the right which is raised in the sculpture. To explain the discrepancy, Catterson says, "This is the kind of compositional revision that a sculptor would make in order to make the best use of the marble at hand, as well as for the overall balance in the finished group." Laocoon was discovered in 1506. It had been tucked away in the ancient underground storeroom of a Roman-era vineyard. How it might have gotten there, the story doesn't tell. Note that I've enclosed the word discovered in quotes. The word is a standard term in the lexicon of fraud and forgery. An astonishing number of lost old masters are suddenly discovered, revealed, or found in antique stores, stuffed away in attics or under piles of junk at country flea markets. Most, if not all, prove to be fake, or at the very least, deliberate misattributions, a cheap copy passed off as the work of a great artist. In any event, Pope Julius II purchased the sculpture and gave it pride of place at the Vatican, where it stands to this day, resplendent in its beauty and intricacy, forgery or not. Well, that's it for this episode of Fakes, Frauds, and Phonies. Please subscribe, and if you're a victim of art fraud, please write to me. My email is fakesandfrauds, all in one word, at writeme.com. In closing, please note that a illustrated print version of Fakes, Frauds, and Phonies is available at Amazon worldwide in Kindle or paperback format. So this is your host, Mark Luke Carrier, saying bye-bye for now.